you're supposed to like smell coffee beans in between. I didn't know that.
The store has a little jar of coffee beans.
Well, hello, good morning. I think I'm a bit unprepared to work with the internet as it is, but everything's in my head, so I'm just going to speak to you all this morning. This is just our website. I did want to have a presentation, but that's not really necessary, so we're going to use our beautifully newly created website as the backdrop for this conversation. If you came in, if you could put your name and email. We are trying to save the earth, save paper. And so we do have a pamphlet that I would email to you. And then we have a special community listserv. And because I'm the person who runs that and I don't like to create or send emails, you won't get very many emails, but you'll get a newsletter. And if we have any virtual offerings and teachings, you will also get advertisements for that or any campaigns that we have. So, it's actually this green piece of paper. Right here. Oh, okay. But if you need a clipboard, I'm sure. Okay. Here you go. Oh, you have a pen. So my name is Elsie, and I have been doing some of the workshops around meditation and restorative yoga, healing racial trauma through meditation and restorative yoga. And I am the general operations coordinator, if we give it a term, for Queer the Land, but I'm also the lead designer on the renovation project for the house we just bought, and I will get into that. So Queer the Land was founded in 2016 by a group of queer and trans people of color, specifically two groups. So there was a queer and trans African Pan-African Exchange, which worked to bring folks from African countries and African Americans who are queer and trans together to organize a trip to go back to Africa somewhere and commune with queer and trans folks on the continent. And then another group called BASE, which is Building Autonomy and Safety for Everybody, which is also a program that we have, but it was made up of mostly Filipina, queer and trans folks. And so Building Autonomy and Safety for Everybody is a self-defense and survival, community survival preparation program where we teach boxing and other self-defense mechanisms and also just community protectiveness, like how to stand watch if someone's being arrested or how to stand watch if someone's being harassed, how to intervene in a safe way, in a communal way, and also creating plans for safety if folks are in domestic violence situations. And so we have those trainings periodically, but that was a group of folks, and these two groups came together. It's really, Seattle is a big tech town, so everything is very expensive. And so they found that we didn't have any space to gather, whether that's communing or planning or organizing, that was affordable for us and accessible for us. And in the parts of the city in which we historically have been and created community. And so also many of them wanting to start families and buy homes were unable to do so because of the market. And so they came together to start this project around owning our own land and our own labor. And so the labor piece comes where a lot of the original founders and still some of us work for nonprofit. And so we wanted to disrupt the nonprofit industrial complex, which causes small community groups to fight other community groups for funding, but also really limits our capacity based on the qualifications from the grantor and funders. And so we wanted to be a grassroots organization and not a nonprofit. And so for the past few years, since 2016, a lot of the work that we've done, as I said, BASE and other trainings and skill building for the community. We partnered with an organization in Oakland called Street Medics, who, because of gun violence or police violence or domestic violence, and the distrustful relationship between Black community and police officers, or even sometimes medics, decided to, a woman, I forgot what her name was, so I apologize, but if you look up Street Medics in Oakland, she grew up in a family of nurses, and so she started this program to teach folks how to do emergency first aid in the streets. And so we've collaborated with that organization as well, and done like other skill building type of programs over the years. And we've also basically been raising money through getting grants and things like that. And so recently, last year was, as much as it was a hard year, it was a good year for Queer the Land. We received an equitable development initiative grant from the city of Seattle, which helped us purchase a house that was well below market. We purchased a four floor, 12 bedroom house in historically Asian neighborhood called Beacon Hill that was built in 1907. And it was previously an anarchist house. And so there was some kind of like lawsuit type of dispute that was happening between the owners and the folks who lived there. And so a part of the settlement agreement was that they would sell the house for $220,000. And so the city helped us purchase that house. I don't think we have the picture of the house on here, actually. But yeah, and so this year we've been working on that. We've also been working on developing a food program. So in December, we got a federal grant to feed over 300 families. And we partnered with a local co-op, the Central District Co-op, to purchase food. And each family got $300 to $400 worth of food. And we also got money to start an apothecary, a small one. And so that apothecary is free and open to the public at this time. But we also, part of the grant was to get a lot of bulk items. So when the house is more functional, we will have other bulk type items, things that are non-perishables and seasonings, things that are important to our cultures, but free and accessible to the public. We'll even have things that are refrigerated for folks to take for free once we get more stable in what we're doing in the house. And so, this year has really been about filling out grants, running our campaign. We had we still have a GoFundMe campaign called Cutesy BIPOC at Home Together. And you can find it on GoFundMe, where we raised $100,000 to go toward renovating the house. As I said, it was built in 1907, so it has a lot of things that need to be done to the house and to make it accessible. We want to make that our number one goal, is to make it accessible for different body shapes and different abilities. And that's where a lot of our money will go. Right now, we're working with a queer carpenter and contractor to kind of start the process. And the initial estimate they gave us was $500,000. So, to do all the things. And that's like probably a low estimate because we also need to purchase furniture and, fully stock the rooms and everything like that. But we're working on putting a virtual tour. We already have a virtual tour, so I can also send that via email. It's just not on the website of the inside of the house. I would show that, but I feel like it would take a lot of internet. Just to show you all of the places. So the main floor will be for residents, but also shared with community. We have a music room. The folks who lived there before, they left a grand piano. So that will be that's our music room now. We'll have an office space, and we'll have our bulk pantry space, a kitchen, dining room, and kind of living room study space. And then we have on the second floor, there are going to be five bedrooms, and then there's a shared bathroom and laundry. On the top floor, there are two bedrooms, there are four bedrooms, and two of those will be able to be an apartment for families because they're connected. And they're really cool. I wish I could show you. But so they're really made for folks who might have kids or babies. And then there's two other separate rooms and a bathroom. And then on the bottom floor, the very bottom floor, it's going to be our community space where we'll have a recording studio. We'll have space for folks to rent if they want to have meetings for organizing. We'll have a kids room / fitness area, just a communal space. We want to have a commercial kitchen so folks will be able to utilize our services for a very reduced rate in comparison to other places if they have their own like catering business. And we'll also do classes and things like that there. And then we'll have an art studio space in the basement. So there are there's like five rooms in the basement. And a bathroom. And we'll also have a laundry room strictly for community. And then we have a really huge backyard and a 3-floor deck that needs to be redone. That needs to be redone. It's not up to code. So that's where our first kind of budgetary detail will come from. And let's see, what am I missing? And I'm designing all of that, so, and decorating it when it gets there. So, yes.
So is anyone currently living in the residence?
No, no one can live there.
But it's not up to code.
Yeah, it's not up to code. It's not accessible, and it has a lot of issues. It was very old. When we got the house, even though people have been living there, it was rat infested. The walls are like black with like grease. If you can see the transformation. but I probably would gross you out. And there are holes in the wall and things like that. So we've done like some kind of preliminary maintenance in terms of patching up holes, and it's not infested. It's not dirty anymore. We presume that, like right now I'm trying to get designs done. We have to redo the front deck, so we have to get that approved by the city. And we have to redo a bathroom, which is really very inaccessible. It's very, very thin and weirdly shaped. And we need to do the kitchen. The kitchen doesn't have anything in it, so we have to renovate the kitchen as well and do a laundry space. And so that's what we've committed to do before we allow people to move in. And then as we move forward, we'll raise more money to get the community space. Because right now people could use the community space. It's just empty. I use it. I work out there. So that's able to be used. We go in and out of the house. Right now we have internet, and we're actually working with a local organization called API Chaya, Asian Pacific Islanders against domestic violence. That's not what the Chaya stands for, but that is their origin. It was an organization for Filipino folks fighting domestic violence and Indian South Asian folks, and they came together after a community murder because of domestic violence, a very public one. And they've been around for decades, like 30 years. And so they have a program, an internet program, that was piloted in Oakland, where they put some kind of device on the top of our roof, and anyone within a mile radius can use and access our internet, and our whole house would utilize it, and it would be free to us. But that is in the works. So right now we just pay for our own internet. So we have a lot of folks who are coming to us to partner. We partner with this group called Sovereign Roots, which is a Black, queer, and trans organization that teaches about sustainability and gardening. And so we have a really big backyard, and they're going to be helping us to create an edible landscape. And another partnership we have is with Bike Works, which is a local organization that fixes bikes at a low rate and teaches folks how to fix bikes. They donated 10 bikes to us, and so we're gonna start a bike program, at least for folks to be able to rent out the bikes and for us to ride together, and also Skillshare around how to fix your own bikes. Another program we have right now is Reclaiming Our Futures, which is a program that allows us to vision what the future as a community would look like. And so there are just different kind of elements around that. Storytelling, we have a narrative building program that's happening August 4th. Learning how to create and express our own stories and narratives, and how to own our own stories and narratives and share them in writing, but also verbal form. The possibilities are endless for the things that we can create. We also, during Black August, Black August happens every year, if you know about it, but it started with an uprising in San Quentin in the 70s with Black Panthers, where they fasted and did educational study to protest the treatment in the facilities. And so we will be having free body work sessions for community members to access. So we'll be using our space for that. And that's one of the first programs that we've been able to have inside of the house. Will also have a book swap. We give out free books to people all the time. We buy them. The foundation of our organization is on Emergent Strategies, which is a book by Adrienne Marie Brown. And it talks a lot about how Black and brown, and especially queer and trans folks, can survive the end of the world, right? How can we survive the ways that our worlds have ended many times, and also just the destruction that's happening on our planet in a literal sense. And so we have our 14 points of unity, which are based off of that book as well. And we also have a Black Femme Manifesto, which talks about, it came from our project we did. We did research around equitable compensation and thinking about what are all the missing pieces we don't acknowledge in terms of labor, and really centering emotional labor and the continuous labor in organizing movements of Black femmes specifically, and how a lot of times we do carry the burden on our backs. And right now we are pretty much a Black femme run organization, with, you know, our membership is vast. We have folks who are Native, we have folks who are Mexican descent and other South American, Central American identities, and Filipino as well. I'm trying to fill it. Oh, some East Asian folks as well, Chinese, Korean. Yeah, we're very diverse, but we want to continue to grow and build our base and build our staff as well. We are trying to hire a housing project manager, and also a housing project facilitator and a housing manager who will be in charge of facilitating the programs that we have, but also being a resource for the folks who live there. It will be short term, but we have extended that. In normal kind of housing cooperatives or housing programs, short term is 6 months to a year. Ours will be a year to 3 years that folks could live, and they would be no one would pay more than $500 to live there. And so we really want to create a grassroots foundation where we're continually getting donations, but we are going to be renting out our facility spaces. And all of our programs are free for members, as they pay $20 due, or they work for an hour, which is equal to $20. And so for our programming, if you're not a member, it's a sliding scale, usually around $10 to $25 donation based. And that's how we would want to sustain Queer the Land. We don't know what that looks like. We just know that we don't want to be dependent on grants, but we're very fortunate right now that a lot of our grants have been general operating funds, and we hope that foundations will continue to move in that direction of general operating and loosening up loosening the qualifications and the oversight around those grants, entrusting us in our autonomy that we are spending the money in the right way for our community. Are there any questions? I know I kind of went through it fast.
Yeah, I have a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Can you expand on, first time I've heard someone coin the phrase nonprofit industrial complex.
Mm-hmm.
Can you expand on what that means to you in terms of the amplify what you mean by that, mm-hmm. and maybe examples of what you'd consider to be a nonprofit industrial organization versus other organizations that are different? I mean, I think I have an idea, but.
Mm-hmm. So I guess if we are, comparing it, there would be maybe grassroots organizing or grassroots organizations, which are created and run by and funded by the community to actually solve problems. But the nonprofit industrial complex really talks about, the kind of crabs in a bucket mentality or environment that nonprofits create or that grants create, right, of several nonprofits doing the same thing but not being able to coalesce to solve an issue. And so they're fighting for funds from like one funder or a few funders who are giving larger sums of money. Also, funders tend to not give general operating funds, and they have heavy oversight on reporting and how funds are used. But also nonprofits, They don't really solve issues. And we want to be in the we want to be in the frame of mind of actually dissolving these inequities that are happening in our communities, and not a business, essentially. nonprofits running as a business, where a lot of nonprofits, GLAAD or HRC or any of these big kind of nonprofits, is usually very hierarchical. The ED gets a lot of money, and the employees not so much, and the actual issues very little. There are, you know, even around 2020 and a lot of in the uprisings in Black Lives Matter, the protests, and folks, specifically white folks, giving money to Black Lives Matter, the nonprofit or corporation, and some affiliates of Black Lives Matter, like smaller franchises of it, putting out a letter around Black Lives Matter, the giant, and the few people who run it, keeping that money and not giving it to smaller individual affiliates of the organization, and also not providing money or support to the mothers and families of the victims of police violence. And some mothers, like Tamir Rice's mother, wrote a letter to the public about being homeless, not being supported, and really being used as a tool for popularity and upward mobility for a lot of folks. And I don't think that's the original intention of Black Lives Matter, but I think when you get sucked into the nonprofit industrial complex, that becomes your identity, that becomes what you start to believe in, and a lot of the more grassroots organizations are left behind. And so we didn't want to continue to create that imbalance.
So is Queer the Land organized as a 501c, or are you operating underneath somebody else?
Yeah, so we have a physical sponsor, Allied Media Projects, based in Detroit. And yeah, Adrienne Marie Brown is one of the founders of that organization. And they really do media-based activism. So a lot of the organizations that they service are in that realm. And we're a little different, but and we're also different because most of the folks that they represent are in Detroit, and we're not in Detroit, but we've had a long history and collaboration with them.
So then donations to your organization would run through them and mm-hmm. qualify as a charitable mm-hmm. gift?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so they make sure our taxes are right, and we're not breaking any laws, and they are responsible for how we're using the money. So we're appreciative of that we don't have to do that kind of labor. So all money goes through them, and we can only access money through them unless you all wanted to donate directly, which folks have asked that. In terms of being able to access money quickly, or for the house, we want to start on, well, we have a bank account, but we want to kind of use that bank account for house needs, emergency needs, when we get more people in it, kind of start a pot, because it takes about 20 days to get money, so.
How many people are involved in decision making?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I didn't even mean. So we have a structure where we have circles. So you have a core. Well, that kind of structure is changing. But so there's me and another housing manager person who kind of run the financials, or we get things approved for folks to purchase, or to, we have a fund, actually a housing fund, where we can give people up to $1,000 in a year. So we do that. Or we also have an education fund where we give people up to $750 in a year for educational purposes, as long as they utilize that those skills for Skillshare for the community. But then we have housing circle. We will have a liberation circle. We have a new member circle, and we have an advisory circle. And so right now our most active circle is a housing circle, and it's about 5 people, and so they make decisions that way. We bring up proposals, and then we justify those proposals, and we put out a vote. If it's something that's going to change the trajectory of the collective, we put out that vote to our membership. And we have meetings every other month. And then we have, on the off months, we have community meetings where everyone is invited who supports and wants to learn about Queer the Land. We also utilize our advisory board as mediators and to provide counsel on decisions that we're making as well. Yes.
I'm sorry I was late, so maybe you already spoke to this. But what's the liberation circle?
Oh, I did not speak to this because I forgot to mention the circles. Liberation circle would be visioning for, would be collective visioning for how we would like our collective to move forward and to expand in terms of, we did a research project around equitable compensation that was part of the Liberatory Circle initiative around how can we, what are the types of labor that we're not compensating and who are we not compensating, and what is our compensation structure and how is that fair, equitable, and takes into account the past history of certain groups and contributions of certain groups and identities, and just trying to think about a new way of thinking about decision making or authority. Like right now we are working to create a cooperative working model because, you know, from a trial and error and not wanting to be employers, but to have folks be able to come and share their gifts and be compensated for that as well. That makes sense.
Questions. Well, one that you answered, but how long people can stay in the residence. There's so many moving parts to this. It's like, wow, kind of overwhelming. But thinking about the residence part. Okay, so they can stay there like 6 months to a year, I think you said. So, or how long for you?
Normally, when there's temporary housing, like within a state structure or a federal structure, it's usually 6 months to a year. Our structure will be a year to 3 years.
Oh, a year to 3 years. So, those folks that have this place to live for a year to 3 years, during that time, is there like some kind of a program that, so then your 3 years are up and you're in expensive Seattle? Is there a goal, a way to help them have a sustainable income that they can live someplace in expensive Seattle after their time there? How does that part kind of work?
We're still trying to figure that out. We thought about offering case management or other kind of social service opportunities, but we don't have the infrastructure for that, and so we're still trying to figure that out. We hope that the low rent would help them be able to save their money as well. Or also creating relationships where folks could then create something on the outside and live together in community housing and put their funds together as well. But it's something that we're still thinking about.
I guess kind of along with that, but how will you determine who is, who to choose to be able to be your your first residence? You know, because that can be an amazing situation for people to have a low rent like that in Seattle. Like, how will you pick who gets to do that?
Yeah, we're still trying to figure that out as well with our advisory board and Housing Circle, but we do know that we would have an application and different applications that are accessible to different people, and that we would take them to a council of folks, a group of folks to read applications and to make a joint decision that way through voting of some sort. But we have not really gotten to the point of thinking about what are the qualifications that we're going to be judging their applications on. It will also have to do with community relationships, making sure that we are not housing folks who might be harmful to the community in a certain way, or providing those folks with rehabilitation before they're able to live in a community space. So, yeah.
It's tricky, isn't it? Yeah.
But we just know that we don't want to have the same kind of structure that might be in a different living situation or federal or state housing. So it's very tricky. We're still trying to figure that out. We don't want to necessarily ask, definitely not exclude, but we don't necessarily want to ask people about their criminal history. But we also want to make sure that we're not letting folks in the house who might be predators of some sort in terms of domestic violence and children. So, I would say that would be just our two biggest things, but we don't necessarily really care about your criminal history outside of very violent crime.
Mm-hmm. Who are Two-Spirit people? Well, I don't know what
Two-Spirit
means.
Two-Spirit, it comes from the Native American First Nation community, and they believe, many believe, and this is in general terms, that gender is on a spectrum, but also that different genders have different roles. I mean, we believe that, right, as well. But there are some folks who carry the energy of all genders or two genders or more than one gender. And those people are usually very special and sacred to the community. They're healers, they're teachers, they're shamans, they are anointed and chosen by the Creator to provide healing for the community. And so if you think about it in a American or English way, it is someone who's trans, but it's not like someone who's transitioning. It's someone who lives in both worlds, right? Someone who, if you look at them, you would have no idea. They have like the essence and the energy of many different, like feminine and masculine energy.
Not to be overly naive here, but how does this acronym differ from the traditional LGBTQI+ acronym? How do you?
Oh, QT BIPOC?
Yeah, is this an evolution of that, or is it a whole different?
Well, QT BIPOC is queer, trans, black, indigenous, and sometimes on the website, is for Two-Spirit. So queer, trans, Two-Spirit, black, indigenous, people of color, which, you know, it doesn't encompass white people. And also the B and I's kind of in a recognition of the... the historical oppression of certain groups, and making sure that we are putting them at the forefront and centering them in our in their needs in our work. So that's just where that comes from. Some people like the term. Some people don't, because they feel like it's just a term that doesn't really produce any changes or real coalition of communities.
But it's clearly stating that this is for people who are not white.
Yes.
Right, and so, which I would imagine would feel safer
mm-hmm.
for people of color to enter into the space and be willing to be helped
mm-hmm.
by the community. So,
yeah. Any other questions? Yeah.
I apologize if you already covered this, but is Queer the Land primarily working within cities for housing access to PC BIPOC communities, or is there some sort of initiative part of Queer the Land to get farmland or provide access to fresh produce and opportunities
mm-hmm.
through land, I guess owning farmland.
Yeah, I mean, that would be nice.
Yeah.
right now, our goal is the house. And so a part of that house is having a little piece of land. We don't actually really own the land. We're a part of a land trust in which we, in our agreement, have to be a part of it for 50 years. Yeah. So, and we do eventually, through the knowledge that we will gain, want to create our own land trust and expand in that way, and have other folks and other groups have an opportunity to create their own community base and own land. But right now it's really the house, and it's also about providing funds for our community, providing job opportunities, and providing community organizing space and creative space. For people, in the beginning I mentioned there was like really, it was very difficult for us to even meet before COVID. And, you know, like in the wintertime, it's it was very difficult to find a location. So even just having a building where we can come together has been, life changing. We don't have to really think about that anymore, or how we'll be able to afford it. Or if we'll be safe in the space. So, yeah, we're really just trying to focus on the house. But we, I also wanted to say that we believe, since we are a collective, right, of people, we believe in partnering with other organizations. And so we do have partnerships with folks who are doing urban farming. We have relationships with, there's a community farm, kind of urban farm, but they have several locations in Tacoma called Hilltop Urban Garden and or HUG, and they provide fresh food and herbs to people in the Black community within a gentrified space. So we partner with them to learn different things and to help us grow our own kind of small urban garden. But owning farm, I don't know. We definitely don't have the capacity to do that. And we don't want to move into a arena of someone who's already doing the work, but just wouldn't want or need our support. So we also donate money to other organizations that have had less access to funds than us. For example, Trans Women of Color Solidarity Network, and also Black Trans Women Task Force as well. We also organized Taking Black Pride with other taking back, taking black, pride, with other queer and trans organizations and other white allied organizations who provided security for us. I think they're called the Seattle Bike Brigade, but they provided security for us during Pride as well. And this is a big thing. We don't really have a Black Pride in Seattle or a safe space for us during Pride, and so this is the second year that we've done that, but we didn't do it by ourselves. We did it in collective spirit, so, and raise funds that way.
Mm-hmm. So, what would your aspiration be 5 years from now? What would you like Queer the Land to look like?
Well, from 5 years, we would want to have the house completely up and running, renovated, decorated, and being utilized as a community space. We definitely want people to be able to start their businesses there, through whether they're using the kitchen or using the art space, or utilizing renting the space to hold classes or bodywork sessions. So really just an all-around community space that can be rented. And we would want to have we would want to have by then maybe a second or a third cohort of residents in the house, and employees in the house, or not employees, but staff in the house as well. So we're paying community. And I would want to see us have continuous programming that generates income, but also just generates collaboration and visibility for us in the community as well. I would like for us to still be able to sustain the staff that we have as well. We have 2 paid staff, and we get stipend every month. And some of the folks in the circle, including our advisory board, upon request, get stipend as well. Some people donate their time. And so I would like to have a pot of money that could be secure for that, so we can continue to pay for our own labor. I really want to focus on the house and it being up and running and a success.
One of our speakers last week mentioned that they weren't looking for allies, they were looking for accomplices, and I'm wondering if that's the same for you, and if so, what that looks like, what form that we could be accomplices, if that's what you're looking for.
Yeah. Last year also, a group called Resource Generation, which they're not just white folks, but they're anyone who has generationally access to. Oh my God! Oh Lord!
Scared me.
who generationally have access to resources, money, but also just connections, and they raised over $100,000 for us as a collective of people, and so they tapped into their networks. They tapped into their networks, not just to give money, but folks who wanted to do skill shares, so teaching us how to build things, create things, tapping into folks who would be able to give us actual free things, access to someone who may be a carpenter or someone who could build things for us to utilize in the house. I really think that the main thing is connection. The thing that disenfranchises folks the most is lack of access to money and resources and space. And so we have space, we need money, we need folks to be able and want to teach us things. We need visibility and connection to government officials who are going to advocate for laws that make our jobs easier and not more difficult, or legislation. And yeah, I would say that's the main thing, and the easiest thing, especially if you're not in the area. Yeah, like having, like if you were in the area, let's say, having someone who could be our main plumber, you know, who can help fix things, or someone who's willing to give us money, not through the physical sponsor, but just giving it to us in our bank account so we can use it for house emergencies. We've had leaks in the house. We've had, one day our electrician walked in the house and they said that the breaker was smoking and nobody was there. So luckily they were there and was just, they're like, oh, it smells like smoke. And so like someone who's able to, help us with maintenance and just to make our lives easier, I think, make our jobs easier. This is not my main job. This is not any of our main jobs. So I do too many jobs.
Like on your website, if somebody is there, like a list or something on your website, like I know a carpenter in Seattle, like kind of thing, mm-hmm. or a plumber or whatever. Is there like a list or something that folks can look at and say, oh, here's a need, and I know somebody who can mm-hmm. fill that need, or I can fill that need, or is there something like that? On
it's
your
probably
website?
Not look gonna load, but there's this space right here. Ooh. It says support our work, and it gives different ways in which you can support that are beyond monetary. Any way that you feel like your life can be made easier, it would make our life easier. Yes. And yeah, so I think we've got a lot of publicity this year, and we just hope that when people learn about us, that is what is sustained. We don't necessarily need to, like, be in the public. You asked me about an interview I did. I was like, I don't even remember the interview, but I want people to be interested and invested in the work that we're doing long term.
Ambitious. Project.
Yeah, it is. And it just kind of came to us this year. We didn't really know how we were going to be able to afford a house, but the Lord provides. So.
A lot of prayer goes into it. Okay.
Maybe. I'm probably the most Christian person in our group. If I could say that I'm a Christian, but I do believe in the Lord. So, thanks for listening. It is a lot. It's a lot of moving pieces. That's a lot of bringing folks together, wrangling them up to do some work. We just had a garden party last weekend, so we cleaned out everything. Because we're going to paint our house. We chose our colors for Cynthia yellow for our door and Lagoon blue for our siding. And in a Greek villa for our trim. So, we are very excited to get started and to see the progress that will happen. But we definitely won't be open for at least another year. Thanks all for attending. You missed it, but I was saying that I will send out pamphlets. I'll also send out the house tour link for you all to look at, and then put you on a community listserv. I'm the one who sends out emails, and I don't like to send them out, so you won't be bombarded with information.
If you've been to any of Elsie's other sessions or just from today, we have these teaching session evaluation forms.